because it is 12 o'clock.
Sure.
And I am very pleased to welcome everybody to this event here at GraduCon. I am Jason Merchant. I'm Vice Provost, Professor in the Linguistics Department, and with Daniel Ababa, the co-host of this event and of the co-faculty director for UChicago Grad. So we wanted to welcome everybody. It's a wonderful event, GraduCon. It takes place every year, organized by our wonderful Bree Connick, the Associate Director for Graduate Career Development at UChicago Grad, who has made heroic efforts in transferring this very big live event into a virtual and remote format. Those of you who have participated in past years know that it involves dozens of employers who come to campus and set up tables in Ida Noyes and panels and a lunch discussion, which Bree has managed to move entirely online. So I hope those of you who were around for the panels in the morning enjoyed them and profited from them. And there's a whole other set of panels coming up in the afternoon that I hope you've registered for. There's a lot more room this year in those panels than was made possible in previous years. We have no limit on attendance this year. So I just wanted to say thanks for that and talk a little bit about the format of this discussion, our hour right now. So we wanted to, as I said, we've invited and very pleased to be able to welcome the provost of the university, Kai Lee, to discuss with us the importance of graduate education in these times, as in all times. And we'll get to in talking to her in a moment. I wanted to say a few words a little bit about graduate education at the university and then have Bree run a poll in a second. Once we start, I'm going to have Kai introduce herself and talk a little bit about her experience inside and outside of academia, and then we'll turn it over to Daniel Ababa to give a little bit of his background, and then I would like to talk a little bit about my own background. As you know, this event and UChicago Grad is in general here to support you both in your academic careers, but also outside of the academy, in industry, in nonprofits, and in governmental work, which in the current environment is going to be all the more important than it has in the past. Once we go through, the three of us have had a chance to say a little bit about our experiences and our paths. We will be taking questions, and Bree, we'll be collating them and passing them on to us. I'll be inviting her to read a few of them that you can direct them to anyone of the three of us, Daniel, me, and Kai Lee. So I wanted to say, you know, welcome. There's going to be a poll right now, which if Bree could start that poll, that would be great. Just some very basic information about who's listening today, what division you are in, and where in your program you are. That would be very useful for us as we get a sense of who's out there, since we can't see you today. I will not be doing the poll, so I'm going to get rid of that. I thought it's always a pleasure to talk about graduate education, but particularly in times like this. I had for a long time, I've been involved both in my program and at the university and in our graduate programs, and it's a particular pleasure because sometimes I think we don't realize or we take for granted just how special the institution of graduate education is within our university systems. And I'm always pleased to have the opportunity to talk a little bit about what makes it special. We know that universities are institutions that are dedicated to the discovery, preservation, and dissemination of knowledge. But graduate education in particular is something special. It involves the highest degrees that universities grant, and it involves research degrees, which are a way of training the next generation of experts in fields all over all over the world. And I think that in our society, we are really the only institution that is solely devoted to those tasks. Other groups, of course, do some of them, but we have no other motives other than discovering knowledge and disseminating it. And I think that we find ourselves in a moment in history when institutions that do this are under attack, and the people who come out of them are called into question in ways that should give us some cause for concern. And that is that the kinds of expertise that graduate degree programs develop, nurture, and train and represent are under attack more broadly. And yet, to those of us in this world, it has never been more clear than today that these are extremely necessary types of expertise. So these are comments I could have made at any point in the past 20 years about the importance of graduate education. But what struck me in this particular time of the pandemic is not just how important graduate education is, but how resilient it is also as an institution. I mean this both in the sense of the word, both senses of the word institution, namely that the university itself is an institution, but also the institution of graduate education. And that is the structures of learning, of research, of the search for answers and understanding of our world that animates all of our degree programs. So seeing this happen, seeing our university community pull together in this crisis has really been heartwarming and inspiring. Someone mentioned to me recently that it was nothing short of astonishing. I share the sentiment, but I'm not actually that astonished at this. You know, all of us who participate in graduate education, I think, know the depths of commitment and resilience that were always there. And I, for one, found it entirely in line with my experiences of the people, the students, the postdocs, the faculty and staff who make up what is happening in graduate education programs at the university, that they would show that these qualities even more in a time of extraordinary challenges. So I know that, UChicago Grad has rededicated itself to its work of connecting, in this case, employers and employment opportunities outside of academy, with our students here. And in service of this idea, we've structured today's discussion around the paths in and outside of the academy that the three of us have taken, but in particular of our featured speaker. So with that, I would love to introduce to you our provost, Kai-Yee Lee, professor in the chemistry department, and ask her to share a little bit about her experiences and her education. Thank you, Kai-Yee.
Thank you very much, Jason. I just want to start by saying that it is an honor and privilege to be here, even though I cannot see you, and we can join in this format remotely to sort of share our experiences as you are thinking about your path forward and embarking on the new endeavors and journeys that are ahead of you. So just as a little bit of a background, I'm a foreign student. I was born and raised in Hong Kong, and I came to the US for my undergraduate educations. And I did my undergraduate degree primarily in electrical engineering, even though I looked into also computer science and applied math as also my secondary majors. But my interest back then, when I came here as an 18-year-old to the US, is as a undergraduate in electrical engineering. And my dream at that point was really to go for a master's degree and work in the Silicon Valley. And so that was sort of how I have plotted my path going forward. I have lived in the Silicon Valley, but it turns out as a postdoc, and I never really had a job, I have to admit, outside of the academy. So as I was graduating from college, I was sort of getting more interested in physics. And so I ended up deciding to go to a graduate program in applied physics at Harvard. And that was when I really made the commitment to have a career in the academia. And so from that, so I went from electrical engineering to a graduate degree in applied physics, and I did two postdocs afterwards because I graduated in 1992 for my graduate program. And at that time, it's not unusual for us to do an extended type of postdoc. And I also had a sort of two-body problem, that I was soughing. And so that necessitate a longer lead time to my first independent career. So I did my first postdoc at Stanford in the chemistry department and my second postdoc in chemical engineering at UC Santa Barbara. And I have gone through sort of the application for the job process. And in 1998, I started my independent career at the University of Chicago in the chemistry department. And so you are very familiar with the system that we have here in terms of the professor's role in teaching, in surface, and in research. And so those are the areas that I have been devoted, now my 22nd years of my independent career into. And I have gone through the rank as an assistant professor, associate professor, and finally a full professor in the Department of Chemistry. Also, as part of the institute system that the University of Chicago has, I'm also part of the James Franck Institute, the Institute for Biophysical Dynamics, and of course, of the college. And so the career path, while I'm still at the same institution, but sort of my responsibility or my focus actually changes as a function of my role or my tenure at the University of Chicago, with the start of my career, looking more into how to more effectively deliver education, both at the undergraduate and graduate level as an instructor, and also, you know, how to really run a small business, so to speak, to have my independent research lab. And so that has been a very rewarding experience, but it's also an experience when you're starting off, you might not really know all the ins and outs, because we're taught to do research and do scholarship as we are in the graduate education. But a lot of the things about sort of, you know, managing a laboratory or how to most effectively pedagogically to deliver instruction is not necessarily as part of our formal training. So there's a lot of sort of learning to do at that stage, but also included is like, you know, the getting funding for research, writing grant proposal. Again, a lot of that is not formally trained, and a lot of students would have the experience of assisting in putting grant proposal while they're in their graduate study. So all that some of you or all of you might have some experience in, but there's still sort of a lot of learning in that process. And as we progress, I was given sort of leadership position and opportunities, first in really doing something that I'm familiar with, which is the leading the science effort, first as part of the independent research group leaders of a National Science Foundation funded Materials Research Science and Engineering Center. And subsequently, I have served for 6 years as the director of that center. So that was a huge learning experience for me, how to really bring out and leverage all the different complementary capabilities and know-how that our colleagues have and run a 36 faculty centers to really make the whole greater than the sum of its parts. And of course, that also include the graduate educations as well as outreach to the community to bring science to the community as well. I was also given opportunity to do more sort of university administrative positions, and that opened my eyes to other parts of the university that I might or might not have experienced prior to that. So going through the rank, I have served now as the provost for exactly 2 months and 3 days, or we are in the middle of that 3 day right now. And it has been a humbling experience to work with all parts of the university, and especially under the current pandemic, that we have to make a lot of fast decisions in a very short time with only the data that we had at that given point, and without really knowing what new news is going to come the next day. And it has been really humbling to really try to understand the challenges and difficulties the different constituency has from the campus, and trying to come up with policy that would help and ensure the missions of the university in terms of both education and research can be continued, and also taking care of the community that we all are part of. And so in the process, I have to say, over the last, say, 3 to 4 weeks, I have learned tremendously, and I'm grateful for given the opportunity to do so. But this is really a teamwork of many, many, many people who work tirelessly around the clock to make these decisions, to push forward this. And all of you too has been a really important part of it, because none of us has expected when the fourth quarter starts is that we would be having this meeting in this forum, nor are we prepared to really all go on Zoom on Monday to deliver our classes, to work as TAs, to help our students, or to take the classes that you are taking as a master's students or as a first or second year graduate students. So all of us are very flexible and resilient, and that is really, really heartwarming to watch. And so, you know, that I sort of have brought us in 9 minutes from when I was a high school student to now I am as the provost, giving you a sense of the various sort of path and decision points that I made. And it might look like that my career is a checkered path of four departments, and I'm not sure what I really am interested in, important for me. But I think as you find out, as you go through those various points of making a decision that might seem a very big decision, or it might bifurcate the path whereby, you know, you won't have a control experiment on the other side that you're doing, I think it is important that you are truthful to yourself in terms of thinking what really means a lot to you and what's important to you in those process, and make that decision that you yourself and not your parents or not anyone else would be happy about moving forward. I know that there is a lot of uncertainty at each of that juncture, and the current crisis also add further uncertainty to it. But I think that there's a lot of opportunities and hopes, and I think resilience at this time is important, and just trust your gut in making those decisions, because you are the one who would have to wake up every morning to go to the whatever jobs or whatever vocations and career that you have picked. So with that, I have sort of shared with you my career path and story is not all that interesting in terms of that I have, as I told my student, I never had a real job because I never left school, and I have spent my entire career starting from 3-year-old to now, I won't disclose how old I am, in an academic setting. So with that, I would turn that to Daniel Abebe to help liven up the discussion, maybe have more interesting career path than being in academia his whole life.
Well, thank you very much, Provost Lee. And I, along with Jason, want to welcome you to this great event, and I'm happy to be able to speak to you. So my academic and professional path, it was nonlinear, I guess would be the best way to describe it. I was born in Illinois and grew up in Colorado, and I grew up in a household of parents, both of whom are academics. So I grew up in a space where hearing about economics from my father and hearing about psychology from my mother was really common. It was confusing, but common. And during that time, as I grew up, I started to decide that I wanted to be a lawyer. I think I decided that because I had some dream of being the president of the United States, and I assumed that you had to be a lawyer to do that. So I remember as a child saying, I wanted to be a lawyer. And I went that direction. So I went to college and I studied political science. When I told my parents I wanted to study political science, they were surprised because they didn't understand what I was going to do exactly with that degree. Maybe some of you in the audience have heard that comment before. And I said, no, I'm going to go to law school, and I think this will be a path that I'm going to pursue, and it's going to be a great path. So I went to law school, and my thought there was that I would actually end up being a corporate lawyer. So the dream of being president started to dissipate, and then the idea of maybe making some money started to stand out most prominently. And this was a period where I borrowed everything for school. I didn't have any. I had everything paid for by loans, so I knew I was going to be in debt, so I decided to be a corporate lawyer. And during this period, I focused on taking corporate courses, and I never really imagined that I would be an academic. I graduated and decided then to clerk for a federal judge. And these are opportunities that are fairly rare, or quite rare, but there are opportunities to work as almost an apprentice with a judge. And I did so for a judge on the U.S. Court of Appeals. And I was very excited about this opportunity. I did that for a year. And then I did what corporate lawyers want to do, which is I went to New York, I joined a law firm, and I was on Wall Street. And I was, you know, billing 80 hours a week and working with investment bankers, helping one large corporation acquire another not quite as large corporation. And while the work was intellectually rigorous, the people with whom I engaged were very, very smart. And the experience there very much accelerated my personal and professional, you know, maturation. I started having this desire to think about the world. I was curious, you know, about politics and history and economics and all the things that I didn't have time to do while I was billing all those hours and working as a corporate lawyer. So at that stage, somewhat to the surprise of my friends, I decided to start studying for the GRE on the side, whatever that meant when I was working so much, and then prepare to kind of go back to school to pursue a PhD. And by great luck and privilege, I was accepted at the University of Chicago for a PhD program and quit the practice of law as a 30-year-old and started again in the fall of 2004, living in a dorm room on $12,000 a year, I think it was, and starting life as a graduate student. I can say now that it was the best professional decision I've ever made. I was thrilled to return to school. I found the environment here at the University of Chicago just absolutely fantastic, much as you've all seen, I think, in your time here. And I continued through a PhD program. I then became a fellow at the law school. Of course, I had a law degree and I was working through a PhD program, and it was a natural fit to perhaps consider how my scholarly interest in political science might match with my experience in law and how I could bring this together and create a kind of a scholarly profile and agenda. So I became a fellow at the law school, and then that was in 2006, and I officially joined the law school, was humbled by the opportunity, in 2008 as an assistant professor. Then the career basically started to focus on academics and then administration. And on the academic component, I was very much interested in getting tenure, as all of us are when we start, and I committed myself to kind of producing scholarship, being a good institutional citizen, serving on committees, mentoring students, and trying to do the best I could to you know, contribute to this vibrant and rich intellectual environment. I did that, and happily tenure came along and all the things associated with that. And then I had a decision point, which all of you will have in your careers, which is to consider administrative opportunities. And that's exactly what, you know, Provost Lee described as well. There's that point when, you know, we want to continue our research, but there are other things that we also want to look at and see if it's a good fit for us. So at the law school, I began to chair various committees and eventually became the deputy dean. And in that capacity, I was able to see the operation of the law school and get to understand how one can not only impact the outcomes of students as a teacher and as a mentor, but also in creating the kind of structures that make the law school or the university effective. And that's in some way what Provost Lee and Vice Provost Merchant and I do. We try to create structures that facilitate your development. So I did that for a few years, and then the opportunity came to join the Office of the Provost. And I joined the Office of the Provost in July of 2018. So I've been there, I guess, 20 months, something like that. And here it's been a great opportunity to try to impact the institution at an enterprise level. And in doing so, I've been able to work with a lot of great people and been able to, most importantly, be a part of UChicago grad. And I've gotten to work with the great staff, with the executive directors, Bethany Stett and Brooke Noonan, and of course with Vice Provost Merchant. Maybe just to kind of summarize, I guess my path was one where it was nonlinear. I, you know, started as, you know, aiming for the presidency, ended up then aiming for corporate law, and then ended up as an academic. But even as I got here, I was constantly open to change, open to rethinking what I was doing, and open to a challenge. And that's what led the path from going from being an academic full-time to being an academic part-time as an administrator, and then joining the Office of the Provost. So thank you for listening, and I pass the baton to Vice Provost Merchant.
So thanks, thanks Daniel, and thanks Kai-Yi. So I want to focus a little bit on my path before getting into an assistant professorship. I think it's very easy for students, especially nowadays, to go online to see their professor's CVs, which are now posted regularly, people, and get an impression that the path from graduate school into academia was fairly seamless. Mm-hmm. This, of course, is far, far from the truth, but the truth is that there's also very few opportunities for graduate students to learn more about their professors' personal, professional histories. For most of us, the CV begins with our undergraduate degree and immediately goes on to other things. So we rarely see anything that happened before graduate school started and then our academic careers. So so I wanted to, just like Kai and Daniel, I wanted to start with a little bit about my background and how I got into academia, because it was, I think many grad students also think that it's very unlikely for them to succeed. And in some sense, that's true for all of us. And in my case, it was certainly true. So I am from Minnesota. I grew up in a family that was started young. My parents started very young. They were both teenagers, and they did not go to college, but rather had good working jobs in Minneapolis, where I went to public schools my entire life. And when it came time to applying for college, I had spent a lot of time in high school working at various jobs. I had worked at in food service and in landscape. I worked one summer as a parking lot attendant, which is a great job for getting a lot of reading done, I can tell you. not a lot of heavy lifting. I worked at summer camps. I mean, I basically worked all the time, both during the schools and during the summer. One of my more interesting jobs in high school was working for a neighbor who founded a company in his basement building biotelemetry devices for measuring heart rate and temperature in laboratory animals. He was an engineer from Medtronic in Minneapolis, which I'll come back to in a second. At the end of high school, I did not have any money, and I didn't know much about loans, and I was not sure I would even apply to college. I only applied to two schools, one of which was the University of Minnesota, which admitted me, and and gave me some funding, and a school on the East Coast that gave me a little bit of financial aid, but not nearly enough. And so my path was that I was going to take a year off and just work full time, because I didn't know where else I would come up with the money. Luckily, I was able to get a few more loans and go to school for a couple of semesters at least. And halfway through, I was working full time in the summers again. And those professional experiences were very valuable to me, not because they were necessarily related to the courses I was taking, but because they made it very clear two things. One, that there was a life outside of academia, that you could earn money and pay rent and succeed, but also that the things I was learning, the kinds of skills that I was learning in school were transferable, that they were valued outside of school, and that's even more so for graduate school. I have to say I sort of ran out of money after my second year and needed to take a leave of absence, and at that time it was very fortuitous that the company that I had worked with in the basement of had become very successful. Well, they had like 35 employees at that point, and they had expanded in a way that they needed to send somebody to Germany to sell their devices for them. And so the guy who I knew, who was no longer my neighbor, because he had made enough money to move out of my neighborhood and buy a nice house, had called me up and said, well, you know German, right? I mean, I took German in high school, and in fact, I was studying some German in college. And he said, well, can't I just send you to Germany and you can start this, you know, branch up for us? And I said, well, yeah, okay. I mean, I have to take time off from college. So I did that. And he gave me a credit card and a plane ticket. And he said, call me when we have an office. So I went to Germany and did that, and sold these devices all over Europe, but primarily in German-speaking Europe, for about a year. And I earned a lot of money, and that was enough to pay for the rest of college. And at the end of college, I had no intention of going to graduate school. I studied linguistics, not because I thought it would get me a job, but because I loved doing it. And I knew that the skills I was learning were transferable enough. And at the end of college, I applied for and I got a fellowship from the German government to study in Germany for 1 year. But after that, I had no idea what I was going to do. And I did not apply to graduate school. And I just, about halfway through that year in Germany, realized that I would have to get a job. So I did. I ended up getting a job, like Daniel, back in New York, working for a management consulting firm. And then that's a strange path, because I didn't study economics and I didn't study, I wasn't in that world that normally banks and management consulting firms hire from. But I had some language skills that I had acquired, and they were looking for someone who could essentially do research in Europe, or rather on European matters. And so I ended up having a job interview, and I didn't own a suit, and I needed to meet a partner of this firm who was traveling in Switzerland. And he said, well, if you can meet me this weekend, you know, I can give you an interview and we'll see. And so I quickly ran to a place, bought a suit, took a train from Stuttgart down to Switzerland, and I got the job. And then I moved, so I ended up moving to New York for a while, working, like Daniel said, many hours, but it was great. And what it meant was that I could save up money if I decided to go to grad school, which at some point I did. I realized I didn't want to be a management consultant my whole life. I really wanted to get a PhD. And so I applied to grad school. And so I did that knowing that I still had loans that I was paying off and that I would probably have to take out more loans to do graduate school, but also that I had saved up enough as a buffer that I could, you know, give money for rent and buy a new bicycle and a few other things. So that's what I did. I went to the University of California at Santa Cruz, right there on the Pacific Ocean, and I spent 5 years there. And I should say that the support, it's been great working at the University of Chicago the last 15 years as we've developed more funding sources and gotten better at supporting our students. And this was not the case for most grad students in the world, in the US in particular. And it certainly was not the case 20 years ago when I finished my PhD. Most of us were both taking out loans, TAing, and that was our full set, sources of support. So it was not uncommon at all, and I'm sure many of you know this, to work outside the university as well to supplement our income. Those of us who are in the non-lab sciences typically have no duties over the summer or assignments. So all of us got jobs and then during the school year as well. So one of the jobs I got in Santa Cruz was working for a local software company. And that was very useful. Again, using languages, I was a software localization firm. And that allowed me to supplement my income. And it made me see again that the skills that we were learning in graduate school, I wasn't actually doing syntactic research for this company, I was a project manager, which involved time management, people management, reading lots of documents, summarizing, reading, translating, a bunch of things that were not directly what I was doing in my PhD program, but it was entire, I was getting good at those things because I had been going through my PhD program. I think that's very crucial to understand, that even though you may feel that you're just learning particular and fulfilling course requirements and writing qualifying papers and doing research in the lab, though all of those skills are in fact very transferable. And I think one of the great things about GraduCon is that you get to see that employers see that. That's one of the things that is hard probably to see from outside, outside of our world on campus, because professors don't talk much about that. We don't have those sort of connections, but that's what UChicago grad is really good at doing. So the rest of my career is not nearly as interesting as the things I did when I was younger, because eventually I also got a couple of postdocs, and then I got the job here, and I have not, I haven't left the university for the last 20 years, and I'm very happy to be up here in the provost's office. But I still have graduate students. I still advise grad students. I still teach. The things that made me love this job haven't stopped at all. I will add one thing to what Kai and Daniel said about administration, and that's something that UChicago grad does well too, is that there are many opportunities for you to learn how universities work, how higher education works, and those careers are extremely useful. There are also ones that are open to people primarily who have that kind of knowledge. So I would say if you're interested at all in those sort of, in that sort of work, there are certificate programs. UChicago Grad runs some in higher education administration, and knowing something about how large organizations work, how they're administered, how finances work, budgets, how HR works, those are all really transferable skills as well, inside or outside of your graduate program. So I'll stop there. I've also spoken for too long, start and turn it back over to Daniel. We want to ask Kai a couple of questions. I'll let Daniel ask the first one.
Yes, thank you. It's great that we have Provost Lee here to kind of give us her insights on the importance of graduate education for professional positions and just pursuit of your chosen vocation. So I have a question for you, Provost Lee. So, you know, the resources of UChicago Grad are really dedicated to supporting students as they pursue different options, whether it's academia, industry, nonprofits, or government. And I know each student has a different sort of set of experiences and degree expectations and requirements. But, you know, what are the factors you think are really most important for students to consider as they're trying to figure out what's the right path for them among, you know, academia, industry, nonprofits, et cetera?
To me, I think the most important part, and I think alluded a little bit to it when I spoke earlier, is that you really have to match something that you're passionate about or it is of great interest to you. And Jason just talked about sort of transferability, right? So your work that you're in your PhD program and a particular thesis work that you're working on, the whole point of that is not that you are going to continuing doing that particular area of work as you move on, but you are learning a lot in how to solve problem, how to tackle difficulty, and if an approach has failed, you learn how to sort of go around it. You learn how to be resilient because, you know, I came as a graduate student from a femtosecond lab, right? Femtosecond is 10 to the minus 15. Of a second. And so when I was writing my thesis, my advisor told me, he's like, Kai, I did that, you know, analysis that when he were to do a pie chart of the amount of time that the experiment ended up in his thesis, it is just a sliver, right? Mm-hmm. But all the time that you are in the graduate program is really learning how to think, how to be critical, how to be sort of creative, and how to apply the skill that you learn from maybe your failure or maybe your previous success to move on to new areas. So I think all of these are completely transferable as you are thinking about your next step. But I think for me, the most important thing is like, what get me up to go to work in the morning? What is important for me? What give me satisfaction? And it is a very personal decision, right? You know, satisfaction might be being the president of the U.S., as my colleague has shared with you his dream, or making a lot of money in industry. And there's no judgment in that. But I think we have to be sort of true to ourselves as to what drives you, what makes you happy. And happy is defined as an internal satisfaction of what you want to get out of your career. I think those are important things that's when I refer to as a gut feeling, that you know from deep inside what really drives you and what's important for you. And I think all the more important when you're going at the path whereby there are bifurcation points and you could be as happy taking job A versus job B. And then it becomes something that you have to ask yourself more deeply as what really is meaningful to you. But again, this is a very personal answer from my part.
Well, that's very helpful. Thank you. Jason.
Yes. So I had a question, which is in our current crisis, you know, what do you see as potential changes to graduate education next year? And what can our students do to prepare for it?
Well, I think being in this forum and seeing you all in a virtual setting already tells us that we have undergone a lot of changes over the last even 2-3 weeks, right? And so changes will be tremendous in its format, but might not be in its essence, I think. My lab, I'm an experimentalist. I'm in the chemistry department. My lab has shuttered the Sunday before the stay-at-home order was put in place. And yet, we still have our group meeting, 8 o'clock on Wednesday morning. Now, we just make sure that everyone is on Zoom. We won't be able to share breakfast when we're having our group meeting, but that still goes on. So being the lab being shuttered, my graduate students are redirecting their work into doing more literature reading, doing more data analysis, and doing more of the writing that might have not been able to accomplish when we're busy working on our experiments. So the pursuit of knowledge and trying to sort of find ways to address the questions that whatever your thesis topic is has not changed. But maybe you're limited. Some of us, you know, that require travel to a foreign country for the primary sources for your research work, that would be hampered. But, you know, maybe through library resources that we have, you might be able to get access to some of them. For the lab scientists among you, right, you know, you would not be able to get into your lab unless right now you're doing COVID-related research. But that doesn't mean that you cannot do your work while you're in a different setting at home. Understanding that there would be distraction at the home setting depend on every individual's home situation. But I think the sort of seriousness on the pursuit of knowledge and our interest of getting to the bottom of whatever problems that we're trying to address and solve has not changed, even though our physical manifestation of our meetings, of our the way how we interact with one another might have to be changed. We have to be social distancing because of the current crisis.
Thanks. So I think now I'll ask Bree Connick to weigh in with some of the questions that she's had a chance to look at that have come in from our participants. Thanks, Bree.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you so much. This has been a great discussion so far. So we've had some really good submissions into the Q&A from our audience members. And this is really, I think, could be taken by any of you or all three of you, but especially for people that are, you touched on this a little bit already, but if you are a graduate student or postdoc that is considering a field really outside of the traditional ones for that degree path or that discipline, what would be your main pieces of advice for someone who is trying to figure out how to navigate that process?
Well, if I could just give one very small piece of advice is the kind of CV that you build for an academic job is going to look a little different from the resumes that that employers would ask. So I would encourage you to go to UChicago Grad, who have workshops on building resumes, and they will help. They can help you adjust and talk about the skills you've acquired as opposed to just the publications or the courses you've had. That's a very small thing, but I think that they're very well prepared to also point you in the various directions. So if you already know what kind of industry you're interested in, then I would say UChicago Grad should be your first stop in getting advice about how to prepare for that particular kind of job application.
May I build on that? I think that's actually a big point that Jathan's making, and I can describe a little bit of my experience when I was a PhD student. When I talked to my colleagues who were thinking about making exactly that sort of transition, maybe the biggest point is I think a message that all of us have been saying is that the skills that a University of Chicago education provides is really a way of thinking, a way of approaching problems, a way of critically engaging. And the single biggest tool you'll bring to whatever vocation you choose is that set of skills. So remembering that in the first place, I think, is really important, and finding a way to communicate that into a different area. And that's where UChicago Grad comes in. There are a lot of norms and practices and customs from CV and resume to the way you present an interview to the normal way you engage that just they're not a question of intelligence. It's just you're not familiar with it. I had to learn those things when I left corporate practice where people talk in a particular way and then went to academia where processes are very different. So I saw that experience. But you know, I want to second the fact that these transitions are common. I had colleagues, for example, in political science and who were doing political theory who ended up going to management consulting because the skill set they brought was great, but they had to learn a little bit on how to engage in that particular environment. And that's where UChicago Grad will be very helpful.
I think maybe just add an additional perspective is, for example, data analytics is a very popular field, but maybe you are a student in the experimental science and you don't have exposure to it. And one way to get that is that there are sort of, as Jason mentioned, that there's a certificate program that give you the exposure to it. But there is another way, and it really depends on the arrangement in your particular department, that it is not uncommon that we allow students to go out and do something that is related to that for a 3-month period and be exposed to it either in a sort of voluntary corporate type of setting to understand what the field is like, or to be taking courses on campus that might be different from your major requirement that allows you to have the exposure while you're still a graduate student here at the university.
Perfect, thank you so much. And then another question that has come in from a couple of different people have submitted a similar question, so I'm just gonna kind of collate everything together. Kind of reflecting back on your own experience, now that we have, you know, hindsight is 2020, as you all have such various different pathways that have led you here, can you reflect back on and say, you know, if you could talk to yourself a year before, 6 months before you applied to whatever various jobs that you've had and positions, are there things that you would have done differently? And kind of with that, how would you tell people that maybe are about a year before finishing or going on the job market, what you think they should be doing?
I'm happy to start on this one. There are many things I probably would have told myself. I'll try to focus on those that are, or one or two that are most helpful. First, I would have said, you want to have general goals, but not to be so rigid to think there's only one particular path to get there. And, you know, it's not that one job in that one industry that will make or break the next 40 or 50 years of your, you know, professional careers. And I think we have a sense sometimes of looking that, you know, I'm leaving school, I have to have the next position and it's got to be the right one. And if it's not the one that I've always been thinking about for my whole life, boy, my opportunities are going to be somehow unsatisfactory. I think that kind of thinking is not helpful. I think I did a little bit of that, and I wish I could have done a little bit better in that regard. The second thing is related, and then I'll stop very briefly. Being open to opportunity, being flexible, being willing to take risks, and being willing to be a little bit resilient if the risk doesn't pan out. Because in some ways, fortune favors the brave. And, you know, I took a risk when I left the law firm to go back to graduate school. You'll take a risk when you think about what's the next career to go to, what position you should take. But being willing to do that and being flexible to what comes and finding the opportunity that's in it rather than maybe what appears to be a temporary setback or a pivot point to a different direction, I think is important.
If I may add, I think, you know, for many of the job search that has a cyclical nature, so thinking a year ahead is really important. Even if you are thinking about academia, you might have more than one area of interest that you want to, and say if you were to think about the next step of the postdoc, don't limit yourself as into just looking at the particular area that you're currently working on, right? Taking a risk is important. I mean, it is really not my plan to go through 4 departments throughout my academic career and my training. I mean, it's really not a very nice resume to look for a job if you want to have a particular area to be recognized as an expert. But that's just what happened, that my interest goes in a way that is nonlinear, to use Daniel's term. And I was just following it. I was not sure whether that would hurt me or to help me. But I also was not sure that if I want to go a different path, because that was my interest at that given point. It ended up, you know, back then, I'm dating myself, interdisciplinary work was not a keyword, but it has turned into an important thing. And I'm not trying to game the market, but that I was just following my passion into doing that. And so planning ahead is important, and not just applying for just one position is also important, right? You know, you could be applying for different type of position because you might not truly know what you want to do. And so, but when the opportunities come back, that allows you to really be more reflective And really at that point, test your gut feeling. If you have some sort of, you know, this is a really high paying job, but I'm not sure I really want that. That tells you something about what you want. And so I think planning ahead is definitely important from my perspective.
If I could say one thing to myself, 6 or 12 or even 24 months before, would be two things. One is be prepared for failure, right? No matter whether you're applying for academic jobs or non-academic jobs, it requires a lot of effort. You will be sending out a lot of resumes, writing a lot of cover letters, and most of them will lead nowhere. Sometimes you won't even hear back from the people. That is normal. Every one of us could fill a wall with rejection letters if we wanted to. And that's no different in academia from outside of academia. The other thing I would say, though, within academia particularly, is if I one piece of advice I think holds, and Daniel and Kai said a version of this already, is educate yourself about what else is happening. And that doesn't mean you have to spend time taking courses necessarily or doing certificates, but go to workshops, go to low cost events, just to hear how other people in your field and in related fields talk, because you're gonna need to know what they're thinking and the vocabulary that they're using around their work in order to interact with them as potential future colleagues, right? You may be going in there as the best syntactician ever, but the people who are hiring you are not all syntacticians. They might be semanticists, or they might be phonologists or phoneticians who don't even speak the same language as you. If you've gone to departmental or divisional events where those types of scholars and scientists are presenting their work, you will know at least enough to be able to communicate with them, to make them understand that you are open to talking about how your field interacts with theirs, and that they can look at you as a potentially valuable colleague. And I think that's one thing that it's easy to forget as we finish our degrees in graduate programs that are very focused on narrow, you know, both master's and PhD programs, where we're writing our thesis, we're becoming super experts in this. We don't have time for other things. The last thing I want to do is to go to some talk down the hall in some other department that is only marginally related. And I get it, you know, but I'm saying try to make a little bit of time for that, because it helps you expand your vocabulary about what your potential colleagues would look for.
Wonderful. Thank you all so much. I'm going to hand it over to Daniel to close out our keynote discussion.
Well, thank you very much. And on behalf of Provost Lee, Vice Provost Merchant, and all of us, part of UChicago grad, we very much appreciate you joining us for this panel discussion. I know it's in a unique setting, the virtual setting, but I hope you were able to follow along, and that we provided information that might be helpful as you make your decisions going forward. I want to make sure you're aware that we still have panels going. There are many career panels going on in the afternoon. Please take advantage of those and attend and get even more information as you plot your path. And I want to make sure that everyone remembers that UChicago Grad is still open. It's still committed to supporting grad students and postdocs. We'll be engaging in virtual advising, virtual workshops. So please don't forget that. And then in the end, we hope you're well. We are thinking of you, and we wish you the best and your families the best. And stay in good health, and we look forward to seeing you virtually for the spring quarter. So thank you very much.
Thank you. All right. Thank you all so very much for your time, and hope everyone has a great rest of your Friday. Thank you. All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.